Vince Marotta. Can the D-backs keep it going in St. Louis against the Cardinals? That and a lot more starting at 6. Join us, won't you, here on Arizona Sports.
We can talk about what went wrong for the Phoenix Suns on Saturday all day. I'm guessing a lot of people did on Saturday. I think we're at the point now where we can switch the focus to how do they win game two, Wolf. It's funny, I have on the show sheet here, Aaron wrote, does it feel like it's already over? And I don't feel like this series is already over, but it has felt to some extent all season like a good chunk of the Suns fan base is just kind of waiting for the season to be over. Like, yeah, it's going to end earlier than we want it anyway. There seems to be this, like, inevitability, not within the context of this series. It's way too early in the series. But just the vibe around the team or around the fan base all season. I said this to you earlier. Watched the game at a sports bar on Saturday. The place was packed. And yeah. I feel like my table and one other table was actually watching the game. Everybody else was just eating and looking at other stuff and at birthday parties and this and that. I was like, what's going on here? It's the Suns in the playoffs.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that one right now. Listen, I don't have my finger on the pulse of the fans that are out there right now, but my expectation in game number two is the Phoenix Suns come back and play one of their best games. That is my expectation right now. And the reason being is because we've seen it all season long. The desperation level for the Phoenix Suns, I think, is going to be high. Not an all-time high, but I think it's going to be high. And every time they're in a situation where their desperation level is a little high, they typically do well. I expect them to compete. I think the Timberwolves have got their attention right now. And I know you can say, well, Wolf, how did they not have their attention? Well, you know what? The Suns owned them in the regular season. And that never has been a good trend for this team for the most part.
It's weird.
It is weird. And, you know, I don't know if it's overt complacency. I don't know. I think there's a lack of desperation when you've got Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, and Bradley Beal. And I think you look at it like we beat these guys three times. And by the way, they weren't even close games for the most part. We handled these guys. So now I think the Timberwolves have got their attention. And like we've seen all season with the Phoenix Suns being up and down, I think the T-Wolves are going to get a straight right hand from the Suns. Let's see.
Well, that's it. I mean, it's all about the response now because Minnesota looked way too... They just looked like a team that was having too much fun on Saturday. You know what I mean? As they started to pull away, Anthony Edwards in the post-game press conference, and like he was respectful in the post-game press conference. I don't know that he was when he was talking during the game, but you're not necessarily supposed to be. In the post-game press conference, though, he's like, this is great. You know, I'm playing against Kevin Durant. He's my favorite player. Like this and that. It's like, right. Okay. You won by 25 as well. Like Minnesota was allowed to get way too comfortable in the second and third quarters of that game and just sort of coast in the fourth quarter. It's got to look entirely different tomorrow.
You're right about that. Listen, once again, you can't talk about this game, this playoff game, without thinking about the three regular season games that the Suns and the T-Wolves played. And after the first quarter in all three games, the Suns had a lead. They had leads of 22... 12 and 7 after the first quarter of play in all three games. 22, 12, and 7. They had a lead of 1 after this first quarter game. And you were probably like, you know what? Here we go. They still haven't lost the first quarter to the T-Wolves. But you know what? It was not to be. At one point in the second quarter, I wrote this down in my notes. The Wolves had a 4-point lead, and it was the biggest lead they had all season long.
Against the Suns.
Against
wow,
the Suns.
That is crazy.
And
a
4-point lead in the second quarter, and it was the biggest lead they had in any game. That blew me away.
Here's Frank Vogel after the game.
You know, we knew all week that this team is far better than the team we saw in the head-to-head matchups in the regular season. You know, I mean, it's a 56-win team with Cat missing 6 weeks or 2 months or whatever he missed. So, I mean, you know, really a 60-win caliber team that we're playing against. You know, so, you know, we knew they were going to play better. We hoped to have played better in game one, but we got to make a response in game two.
Yeah, I mean, he just said it right there. It doesn't have to be that complicated. Like, I know all season long I've been saying of the three teams, Denver, Oklahoma City, or Minnesota, the better matchup to me for the Suns is Minnesota, because I think we all trust Denver more than Minnesota in the playoffs. Denver just won the title last year.
Yes.
And I trust Oklahoma City more than Minnesota, but Minnesota's a really good team. They basically had the same record, and Frank Vogel just said it right there. They didn't have Karl Anthony Towns for a good chunk of the season, and they still basically had the same record as those two teams. So the Suns are playing a very good basketball team, and it's not that they're on the ropes right now. I'm sure we can play the game tomorrow. I don't know that tomorrow is a must win, but you sure better win that game tomorrow, realistically.
Yeah. You know, also, too, this is going to be a physical series. It really is. So just embrace it. Acknowledge it. And I know we were talking to Killer earlier about this, but I thought the Suns needed to stop complaining about calls. I honestly, put their head down, walk through it, and compete. Just know this is the way that it's going to be. And stop complaining about calls. And I know that maybe it wasn't nearly as overt to Killer. It wasn't. But to me, it was too much. It was. I just want to see you compete. Just go out there and embrace the fact we're going to get hacked. That's what's going to happen. They're going to eat some of these calls. They're going to eat their whistles. They're not going to do it. So you know what? Be consistent. I understand that. You want them to be consistent. But embrace the fact this is going to be a physical series. And do something about it.
You can run a guy like, you know, whoever, Josh Okogie out there. I don't want to run Royce O'Neal out there and be like, hey, take a couple fouls just to kind of set the tone, because they need Royce O'Neal at this point, especially if Grayson Allen isn't playing in game two. And we don't know that. He's just questionable. But yeah, there's a lot to the game within the game when it comes to that physicality, because you already knew Minnesota just likes to play that way. They like a good dirty basketball game. The Suns aren't really built that way. It doesn't mean they can't do it for a few games, but to your point on the officiating, I didn't notice it as much on Saturday, but I noticed it enough to think if game two is officiated differently, the Suns are going to lose their minds, because they are now going to adjust, and that's fine, and that's part of this whole process. But if they adjust to the way game one was called and it's called differently in game two, then I think you used to get into a potentially volatile situation with this team.
You know, the only other thing I want to say quickly right here is over the weekend, I had an opportunity to talk to a coach, a guy who was in the NFL for 27 years, okay, coaching in the NFL, and he watches the Suns a lot. He loves it. He's a big Suns fan, and he said he didn't like how some of the Suns players wouldn't look at their coaches when they were being coached. They thought it was really disrespectful. He thought it was really disrespectful.
Now I'm going to watch for that.
So go ahead and watch for that, because he said to me, it made me think immediately what was going on inside that locker room, too.
That's interesting, though.
Prodding by me whatsoever. Yeah. He brought that up in a conversation.
Because it is a different sport, but at the same time, the dynamic is pretty much
player,
the same.
Player-coach relationship, yeah. And when you coach, you know, once again, you should look them in the eye.
Embrace the Suns playoffs. Go all in with Arizona Sports. Tune in daily in the 8 o'clock hour, the noon hour, the 3 o'clock hour to snag our exclusive Phoenix Suns code word. Text it to 62620 for your shot at scoring Suns playoff tickets. Don't miss your chance. Tune in during the 8 o'clock, noon, and 3 o'clock hours. When we come back, it is officially NFL Draft Week. How pivotal is this week specifically for the Arizona Cardinals, big picture? It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Wolf and Luke with today's MLB standings. Brought to you by America Roofing, Arizona's number one residential and commercial roofing company. They've got you covered.
All right, the NL West standings for as rough as the start of the season has felt for the Diamondbacks, Wolf. They're only a game and a half out of first place.
I know.
Isn't that weird?
I know. The NL West and the Dodgers, who got off to a really, really good start.
Yeah.
Not so much, not much lately. The last 10 days.
The Dodgers are 13-11. The Padres are 12-12, so one game back.
The Padres?
The Padres. The D-backs are 11-12, with just a game and a half out of first. Best point differential in the division by far, the D-backs, plus 28. The Giants are 10-13, and the Colorado Rockies now own the worst record in the National League at 5-17, a minus 55 already.
Oh, my goodness, 5-17, minus 55. Just wallow in that for a minute.
You know who's worse? Chicago White Sox are 3-18 with a minus 71 run differential.
It's going to be a long summer in southern Chicago.
Yeah,
it is,
especially if the Cubs are decent, and they are right now at least. All right, so those are the MLB standings. Over to football. I'm gonna play a cut for you, Wolf, and I'm going to read a quote for you. And I don't like how they fit together, okay? So let's start here. I'm going to play this cut from Field Yates. They're actually both by Field Yates, but I'm going to explain why I don't like the two of them together.
Okay.
This is Field Yates on NFL Live Friday afternoon.
The Cardinals have a chance to absolutely reshape the franchise. They have 6 of the first 90 selections in this year's drafts. And so the Cardinals have a chance, I think, legitimately to add 3 starters in the first 36 selections that could be day one impact players regardless of position. I certainly think wide receiver needs to be checked off. They need to continue to address the secondary. They need a big boost in the pass rush. And then pretty much anywhere along the offensive line they can find depth, I think, should be in play. Hmm. But 6 draft picks in the first 90 for a team that feels like it has its franchise quarterback, that screams the potential for this team to be on the rise in a hurry if this draft goes right.
So before I read the other quote, what do you think about that? Because I completely agree with everything he just said. And I don't know that I remember a Cardinals draft that had as much potential for them to really swing things as this one.
Yeah. boy, you think about it, too. It could be 7. It's 7 in the top 104 right now.
Yeah.
6 in the top 90, 7 in the top 104. And guess what? There could be a few more in the top 104
yeah.
thrown in there.
Yeah. They're either going to have even 6 in the top 90 is absurd. 7 in the top 104 is absurd. And you're either going to use that first one on a really, really good player at a position that you really, really need help,
yeah.
or you're right, you're going to have even more picks. So they are set up to potentially alter the direction of their franchise. I was trying to think back to a draft I remember going in was like, okay, this could really change things. I mean, Kyler number one overall, because you're picking number one overall and taking a quarterback. But this one could like really change the entire landscape of your team.
Yeah, and let's remember as well that Monty Asenfor did the hard thing. He did the hard thing. You know, he had the number 3 pick overall and moved down once again. Now, I know he moved back up, but man, he has done a masterful job of collecting all of these draft picks once again. Just love the quantity of picks and the quality, but the quantity of picks the Arizona Cardinals have. And that could only get better as well. Possibly, if they do trade out a number 4. And once again, Luke, we continue to talk about this, but I base and onions, you have to understand right now, who cares if they don't? Because to your point, they already got 6 in the top 90 and 7 in the top 104.
Yeah, they don't need more picks.
They don't need it, and yet they're sitting there, and they could get Marvin Harrison Jr. or Rome Odunze right where they are. They could get a difference-maker player, a guy that we're going to expect, whoever they take at number 4, to come in and make a big difference. This is why Monty Asenfor can say, he can say it right now. No, we're just going to wait. We're going to wait till we're on the clock before we actually do a deal. Because we don't have to do anything. We can sit right where we are right now and be so totally happy with whoever we get at number 4. Because we know we're going to get a game changer at number 4. And then we'll just take our 10 minutes and we'll just wait for you to make a mistake and just say, you're going to give us 4 number 1. I'm exaggerating, but you get my point. Yeah. Why would you? Why would you do anything but put these teams on the clock
all,
where they must give you their best deal.
All the leverage in the world, but just be aware when you wait. Obviously, Monty is. But when you're putting it all in those 10 minutes, like those are going to be 10 of the most important minutes in Cardinals franchise history, potentially, because you just don't mess it up in those 10 minutes.
Monty's got it, man.
Monty does have it. I feel that. But let me read you the quote that I don't love as much. This is from Field Yates. This ESPN just did a draft notebook, and they went through and asked some of their different writers in Field Yates. The first entry in his notebook says, one idea that people around the NFL have bandied about with me is whether the Cardinals would want to ensure they have a trade back up the order set after a trade down. For example, if they move down from 4 to 11, they might want to move from number 11 back into the top 10. The reason, while there's great depth in this wide receiver class, moving outside the top 10 picks will likely cost Arizona any shot at Harrison, Neighbors, or Odunze, which, again, is something we all know, but it's interesting to hear people around the league talking about it because this is such a pivotal draft. I don't want to pin it on the Cardinals finding a way to trade down and up. You know what I mean? That's such an elaborate thing that happened last year that is not common.
I know, but you know what's so cool about that? We've got to check this. We have an audio file, Basinonians. We do, but I remember asking Monty Ossenfort last year, did you already have the deal in place? Do you remember this,
Luke?
I asked him that, and he didn't answer it specifically, but he did intimate that there was a deal to move back up in place. That's why whatever you just read right there makes a lot of sense to me that this could happen again.
And I'm sure you and I were talking during one of the breaks, like what are the logistics of this? Like Monty seems like a guy who's going to have, he's going to have all the T's crossed and all the I's dotted well before draft night. It sounded like last week he was already pretty much set.
He's paving the way right now.
You better be prepared. I think he is, obviously. And when you're prepared, you can adjust on the fly. But even in that situation, like I'm sure he probably knows right now, okay, Denver's willing to offer this. Minnesota's willing to offer this. The Giants are willing to offer this. He's probably waiting to see if any of them will freak out on Thursday night and be like, oh, I can't believe Jaden Daniels is still there. Here, I'll up my offer or whatever. But I do think it's important to know, and if they do that, Atlanta's willing to trade down with us or something or whoever. The thing is, that's still a lot of moving parts. Even if you know that, what happens if we get to Atlanta, let's say, just say their pick, and they're like, wow, we didn't think this guy was still going to be here. Sorry, Monty. You know, because the trade's not like out there and official. It's kind of just like it's a, hey, if I'm in this position, will you trade back down with me so I can trade up? There's a lot of moving parts on draft night.
You've got to be okay. You've got to have a plan B if, in fact, that does happen, right? Where you might want to move back up and maybe get a Rome Odunze, wherever it may be, right? Or maybe you're sitting there and you're thinking to yourself, man, you know what? We're going to be just fine if we just collect some more picks here and we take Brian Thomas Jr.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, take him at number 11. Somewhere in there.
What other receivers are still out there in free agency?
Maybe you love Brian Thomas Jr. Maybe you love this guy. Maybe you look at him, oh, this is what scouting does. Maybe you look at it and you say, this guy is the sleeper of the draft. Do you think this happens, Basinonians? Do you think that scouts will stand on a table, fall in love with a guy, and say, this guy, if you don't draft this guy as the first receiver off the board, you're making the biggest mistake you've ever made.
All right, do
you're
this.
Buying into all of the hype of one player when this guy, watch the tape, is better.
Trade down, trade back up, take Odunze, take Brian Thomas Jr. with one of your other picks. You're set at receiver for years.
Could you imagine, man? Oh, my goodness.
You just go ahead and cross that right off the to-do list.
Brutal right there.
And you'd still have, what, like 5-6 other picks at that point?
Once again, if they draft a wide receiver at number 4, Kyler.
Text us your thoughts to the FanDuel text line at 620 right now. When we come back, it was not a memorable game for Devin Booker in game 1 against Minnesota. That usually leads to a big Devin Booker bounce back. Is that what we're getting in game 2? That's next. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Yeah. Hey, everybody, it's Burnsy and the Suns could not contain Anthony Edwards in Game 1, and now Phoenix has some work to do if they're going to get back in this series. We'll give you all the big takeaways from the Game 1 loss, starting at straight up 2 o'clock on Arizona Sports.
We took a trip, now we on your block, and it's like a ghost town. Baby, where did we at when they said they're going out?
I always try to hit the baby.
You're always off by baby.
I just can't get it. Baby.
Like somebody's like trying to jump into a game and you're like, all right, wait, my timing's off.
And as hard as I try and I just can't nail the baby.
Wolf's never going to be a surprise guest of Drake's on stage.
No, that's right. Take the cue.
How about this stat, too? I said this during a break, but... NBA teams this weekend, first wave of games in the playoffs, home teams 8-0.
Yeah, wow.
And in hockey.
Come on.
Playoffs, home teams 6-0.
Come on, man.
So far in the NHL and NBA playoffs, the home team is 14-0.
Okay, this is just me right now, and I'd love to get your take on this. I've intimated somewhat of this to you over the time we have spent together on this broadcast. What has it been now? Is this 2 years? We're still year two?
This is year three.
Okay, this is year three.
We're in the third year.
Okay, we're in the third year. Interesting right now, ladies and gentlemen. But, you know, to me, hockey players are the toughest athlete on the face of the planet. It still is a prerequisite to playing the game well in hockey that you better be tough or you're going to have a hard go of it. Would you still agree that that is still a prerequisite to playing the game well?
This is what I would say is I was looking at the first round with people on Saturday in the hockey playoffs, just kind of like, who's out on this team? Nobody's out on any team because anybody that's hurt is playing. So the injury report, I don't think there's really anybody out unless they're like torn ACL, right. They've been out for the year since November. But otherwise, anybody that's kind of like, oh, they didn't play the last week, well, they're going to play, obviously, in the playoffs, though.
Yes, it is a mindset in the game of hockey, ladies and gentlemen. You better be tough to play it. And these guys accept going on the road as a personal challenge to their manhood. It's like, you know what, the best thing they could possibly do is go into somebody else's barn and whip them in front of their people. They take that personally, the opportunity to go do it. And that's why that's even more impressive.
That was the one that threw me off. It was like I typically the better, the higher ranked team wins in the NBA over the course of a 7-game series. Now, you know, Suns, Timberwolves might, if they both play at their best, be a fairly even teams, but just in general, the one seed's always going to beat the eight, it feels like. But in hockey, it's like I expected the first 6 games to be like maybe 2 home teams, 4 road teams win or something. So strange weekend where the home team won all 14 games between the two sports. Here's Devin Booker after the game on Saturday, says it's a best of 7 for a reason.
Yeah, as far as the series, I have been in a few of these, and it's an emotional roller coaster for a lot of people. I think the team that can stay high, not get too high, not get too low, and just stick to the task.
This is Devin Booker's 9th playoff series, all in the last basically 3 calendar years.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it is right now. You know what? It's interesting you played the cut of Devin Booker right there because you did not tell me you were going to do that. Yet at the same time, can I tell you, I think he's going to be the pass of part 2 of game number 2. He's going to be the key that unlocks all locks for the Phoenix Suns in game number 2. I just have this feeling in regard to the Suns and how they're going to play coming out. Now that they've been challenged once again, because they came out and they were ready to play. Their intensity level was there in that first quarter. They were ready to play. They were ready to play over the course of this game. Yet I think the physicality of the game wore them down as the game went along. And now I think they know what to expect. And now I think it's going to challenge the Suns once again. Game 2. You can't lose game 2, right? I mean, you don't want to lose game 2.
No.
It's not like the series would be over. But boy, down 2-0 in the series, do you really want to do that? No way. I think the T-Wolves are going to get the Suns' best shot in game two.
I sincerely
hope
so.
And I think that'll be enough.
The pass-apart game two? Is that what you just called Devin Booker?
The pass-apart two.
Well, you know, you said it there, and you mentioned it earlier in the show, too, and I think it's so spot on that as the game wore on, the Suns kind of wore down. I made the analogy at the start of the show. It's like you have your phone, but you've had your phone for a few years, and all of a sudden it doesn't hold a charge anymore.
It's crazy.
So you're like, boy, my phone, like, battery's almost okay. I'm going to go charge it, get it to 100%. It's great for like 2 hours, and then all of a sudden you look down, it's at like 54% already. That's kind of what the Suns felt like in that game, and they felt that way over various games this season. And the reason I'm bringing it back up is this is a seven-game series. Are they going to wear down over the course of the series? Because Minnesota is not going to come out in game two and be like, we were a little too physical for you in game one. We're going to let up. The reason why game two then would be so important is you have the extra day off before game two. And then game three, you have the extra day off before that because it's Friday. But then you don't have any more extra days off. It goes Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. Like, it's going to be, as this series goes longer, it's going to be more condensed. So the wearing down thing needed to be only a one-game thing for the Suns.
Did you say
trouble.
Need to win.
They need to win. I'm not going to call game two, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not going to call it a must win. I'm not going to do that. But it is a need.
Yeah.
Need to win.
Right? I mean, would you call it that?
Yeah,
I mean, not just a need to win. This is a need to win game. No, it's got to be something a little bit.
Need to win.
It's got
to
be something a little bit more urgent.
Well, because it's not a must win. But if you lose, you're probably not winning the series. That's just
I know,
what it is,
you know,
right?
And yeah, but you can't say with this team in particular, the Phoenix Suns, you can't say it's over.
No, it's
just
not
because
over.
You got a two-game lead.
It's not over, but probably you're probably not coming back and winning 4 or 5 if you fall behind 2-0. So yeah, I would say that qualifies as a need to win. Otherwise, what was the point of the season?
Yeah.
All right, when we come back, this is the 20th anniversary, actually, since the Pat Tillman death. We're going to honor him next. The Cardinals did a great job with something. We're going to play it for you. That's next. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. All right, well, for the final segment of the show today, We're gonna kind of remember Pat Tillman here because it was 20 years ago today. It's April 22nd, obviously, that he was killed in action. And I don't know that there isn't. I can just say that there isn't an athlete in Arizona sports history that is tied more to the heart of this community than Pat Tillman. And we've had some great athletes, some great people in the city, but Pat Tillman is on a whole different level. And yeah, I mean, this is always kind of it's an emotional day for sports fans in Arizona.
Yeah, it truly is. There's no doubt about it. We all know the legend of Pat Tillman here, but it was funny because I was sitting in the lobby of Jake Plummer's bowl-a-thon. Do you remember that? Jake Plummer had this bowl-a-thon.
Okay.
And I was sitting in the lobby, and Pat Tillman walked up with his bike. He had his bicycle. He walked up to it, right, and brought it inside the lobby. So, because there was no place to put it outside.
Yeah.
So I asked him, I said, man, do you live nearby? And he said, no, I live 30 minutes away, but he just wanted to see if he could do it. If he could just go ahead and bike there and then bike back. I mean, you know, this is Pat Tillman. This is the guy that he was. And what's amazing about Pat is the decision that he made to walk away from multi-millions of dollars to sign a contract to go serve this country and give his life ultimately for it is truly testament to the dude he was.
Yeah, there's a good story. I mean, it's a good story up on ArizonaCardinals.com today by Darren Urban, and he mentions in there, like, you know, Pat Tillman maybe wouldn't have wanted this much attention that he's gotten over the last 20 years, but I think it's very fitting that he has gotten that attention. It's cool. Like, I never met him personally, but the people that I know that have met him personally all have, like, just a cool, unique story like the one you just had. It's just like he was a different dude. And it's good to be different that way.
Yeah, he really is. You know, and the decision he made, once again, is so stunning. It's so anti-society for the most part in regard to what everyone else would have done.
Give up the millions of dollars.
Give up the millions of dollars to go serve this country. That truly is Pat Tillman. And Jim Omohundro put together an awesome montage.
Yeah, so we're going to play it for you right now. This is courtesy of the Cardinals and Jim Omohundro, some of his best work. He always does good work, but here's some of his best.
Today, our fellow citizens, our way of life, our very freedom came under attack in a series of deliberate and deadly terrorist acts.
Both towers of the World Trade Center have been hit by aircraft. Both are in flames.
There is black smoke coming from both of the towers. It's a horrific scene here.
There are fire crews just screaming into this area from every conceivable direction.
I was sleeping, and I got a call from my brother. I'm sure like a lot of people, I was laying there, and I get a call from my brother, and he's, you know, get your ass up, turn the TV on, and I ran outside, turned it on, and I think the first image I saw was them showing that second plane coming in and, you know, and whacking that second tower.
People are standing in the street in tears. People are panicking and calling their families.
A situation that started bad just gets worse and worse and worse. The World Trade Center has totally collapsed. If you're just joining us this morning, you're for a horrific surprise.
Of life, presumably profound.
Here we go!
Here we go!
All the way!
All the way!
Every day!
Every day!
There's probably no better time to talk about a guy who took 911 to heart and made a life-changing decision based on his feelings, something he felt he needed to do.
You know, it's like anything. You kind of take it for granted, especially in the country we live in. We are such a free society, and I've always had a great deal of feeling for the flag. But even someone who considers themselves that way, you just don't think about it all the time. You don't realize what it gives. You don't realize how great a life we have over here. You know, times like this, you stop and think about just how, not only how good we have it, but what kind of a system we live under.
Everybody I've talked to, they just say the guy just bounced to a different beat. And they wasn't shocked that, you know, he'd make a decision like that.
Well, I think the people that knew Pat, the more you knew him, the less surprised you were.
You know, my great-grandfather was at Pearl Harbor, and a lot of my family has given up, you know, has gone and fought in wars, and I really haven't done a damn thing as far as laying myself on the line like that. And so I have a great deal of respect for those that have and what the flag stands for.
Over 700 U.S. soldiers killed in the war in Afghanistan and Iraq. The latest from the world of sports.
Sergeant Pat Tillman was killed in a firefight. The White House said today that he will be remembered as a man who put aside celebrity to serve.
While many of us may be blessed to live a longer life than he did, few of us will ever live a better.
ASU number 42 jersey will be retired. The Cardinals will never again have a number 40 on their roster.
Remembrances of a soldier, a son, a brother, a husband, a friend, an athlete, a hero.
In sports, we have a tendency to overuse terms like courage, bravery, and heroes. And then someone special like Pat Tillman comes along and reminds us what those terms really mean.
A lot of times in football, the analogies with war are kind of thrown around freely, and on a day like today, you kind of see how hollow those ring.
Pat was true to his heart, a worthy role model. Here's somebody that embodied the very concept of a role model.
Pat Tillman is a hero. Pat Tillman was a warrior.
Martin Luther King, in one of his many addresses, stated that the true measure of a man is not where he stands in times of comfort and convenience, but where he stands in times of conflict. There was never a question where Pat Tillman stood.
We should all feel cheated and robbed of a guiding light in our lives, but know that Pat would want us to stop crying, get off your ass, and get a hold of yourselves. He would want us to be our own person and blaze our own trail.
There's part of me that wants to step back and give up. You know what? Throw in the towel, chalk it up, whatever term you want to use. But you know what? You all here know what the answer is, and you know what? It's a simple answer. There's no way that Pat would ever accept us giving up on life. There's not a chance. No, because Pat's glass wasn't half empty. It wasn't even half full. Pat's glass was filled to the rim. It was overflowing with life.
Passion is kind of an important word for me, whether it's, you know, playing sports or whether it's, you know, just living or whatever you're going to do, you should, in my opinion, you should be passionate about it, or else why do it?
Pat was balls to the wall in everything he did. His conviction and passion in pursuit of any goal, whether big or small, inspired me and everyone he ever met.
Do not stand at my grave and weep. I am not there. I do not sleep. I am a thousand winds that blow. I am the diamond glints on snow. I am the sunlight on the ripened grain. I am the gentle autumn's rain. When you awaken in the morning hush, I am the swift uplifting rush of quiet birds in circled flight. I am the soft stars that shine at night. Do not stand at my grave and cry. I am not there. I did not die.
I don't know. I get a lot of satisfaction out of, like, you know, my family being proud of me. My brothers, you know, I care what they think and how they feel, and I want them to be proud of what I'm doing. I want to push myself, you know. I don't necessarily want to be. I think you got to get out of your comfort zone if you're kind of comfortable all the time. It's like if you're skiing, if you're not falling, you're not trying. You know, so I kind of want to push myself a lot.
1976 to 2004. That one little dash in there represents a lifetime. How do we spend our dash?
I try to be prepared. I try to know, you know, what I'm getting into. You know, that obviously the more you know, the better off you can be.
He was thirsty to be the best. He wanted to be the best of that shot gunner. And he would thrive of getting every bit of knowledge that he possibly could from my guys, from his guys. Couldn't get enough. Take it from me, there is nothing better than having a bunch of squared array Rangers on your side. And Pat definitely raised the bar for him and his guys, no doubt about it.
You'll always find those who think they know what is your duty better than you know it. The great man, however, is he who in the midst of a crowd keeps with perfect sweetness the independence of solitude. We should remember that Pat Tillman sweetly and independently followed his heart. And now in death, he leaves us with a great, noble, and difficult challenge. That on this earth, we should live not to follow the crowd, but first and foremost and only to remain true to our own integrity.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.